Arthur Danto is a professor of philosophy at Columbia University. He's also the art critic for The Nation magazine. He says he writes philosophy for philosophers and walks the art galleries as a spectator, but the happiest moments of his life are those in which he exists on both planes simultaneously. Danto has a new collection of essays reflecting on the state of the art world from his unique perspective as both critic and philosopher. He says the nearest thing to a philosophical genius the art world has produced is Andy Warhol.
I thought that every move he made as an artist was somehow that raised a philosophical question and raised it with a vividness.
Questions like, what is art and what's the difference between art and advertising?
Well,
art and
well, art and yeah. mere reality.
Yeah, right.
Things of that sort. He raised, when he did movies, the basic philosophical questions about moving images, it seems to me, by, for example, making films in which there was no movement at all. And you immediately say, well, in what sense are those movies? And nobody really had ever tried raise those questions before. And I thought he was an intuitive philosopher. But my interest in Warhol was from that. And the impact he made on me at one point where I've often written about it and probably did in this book too, a great exhibition at the Stable Gallery in 1964 where he just showed those Brillo boxes, and I found that absolutely astonishing. And it was the first time I'd ever seen anything as a philosopher that raised a philosophical question about art. I mean, there were the old questions about resemblance and imitation and so forth, but it didn't seem to me to go very deeply into anybody's understanding of art. And here was Warhol suddenly raising the question, why is this a work of art, though something that looks exactly like it isn't one? It's just a, what I call a mere thing. The fact that finally it was possible to think philosophically about art in a way that directly connected the philosophy of art with the practice of it.
You've coined the word disturbational to describe a certain kind of art. Explain why you needed to coin that word.
Well, I was thinking at that time about some very, very marginal art, performance art primarily. At least it was marginal through the history of art. It was not just a depiction of disturbing things. A lot of art's that. Leon Golub is an artist who shows people being tortured, and that's extremely disturbing. But I was interested in those kinds of artists who confront an audience and try and create in confrontation with the audience a sort of transformative experience, almost operating like priests and priestesses did in very ancient times. And I like the idea, I used the word disturbation, as I say in the book, as a kind of natural rhyme to masturbation, where you begin with images and fantasies and you get real spasms. And that's what you start at. You start with something which is set apart. It takes place in an art gallery. It's institutional. And if the performance succeeds, lives have been transformed in consequence of it. And I think that, marginal as it is, it's very important. And it recovers something that had been lost sight of, I think, in the history of art. I think it was there very much at the beginning, but we've become such formalists, so much interested in questions of color and composition and abstraction, that art had distanced itself considerably from life. And I thought that this form of disturbation was an effort, at any rate, to reconnect art with life, and I rather applauded that.
Let me ask you about the work of Robert Mapplethorpe, who's become probably the most controversial artist because of all the attempts to censor shows of his work. You reviewed his 1988 show at the Whitney, and you wrote, this wasn't an easy experience, but a crucial one.
Yeah.
Can you give us a sense of what you find so important and valuable about Mapplethorpe's work?
Well, Mapplethorpe was alive when that show went up. And he made decisions as to what could and couldn't be in that show. And that Mapplethorpe, at the edge of death by AIDS, should have wanted those photographs of sadomasochist couples or practices, as he photographed, to be in that show, meant to me that he wanted them to be taken seriously, that some kind of a statement was being made, and that a viewer or a reviewer had an obligation to try and see what that statement was and to respond to it in some way. It was a brilliantly installed exhibition. You found yourself at the far corner from the entrance, suddenly surrounded by these very difficult images, morally difficult images, images of practices that were a bit scary. There was Mapplethorpe, and he said, "You've got to pay attention to these paintings, these photographs. You've really got to think about them." And that's why I thought it was crucial. I thought there it was. I mean, AIDS was getting to be very definitely the one of the moral cruxes of our era, and that I just it was so easy to stigmatize people who suffer from it, and it went well beyond anything I think that Mapplethorpe had in mind when he made those photographs for a much smaller audience than saw them at the Whitney, and went much beyond what I think he thought of himself as doing in his project as a photographer throughout his life. He was a very fashionable photographer, very glamorous photographer. But there, at the end of his life and in those circumstances, I think he had a certain authority. And I felt that the show had a meaning in excess of the particular images that were in it.
Many of the people trying to censor artworks or to restrict funding to artists who use controversial subject matter or sexual subject matter or homosexual subject matter, these people are saying, why should taxpayers support things that some people find obscene or that some people feel is offensive? What's your answer to that question?
My view is that issues of taste don't enter into the definition of the taxpayer at all. That's to say, the taxpayer is a civic category, somebody who supports a government. The only interest a taxpayer, as a taxpayer, has is in civic virtues like freedom. I don't think that we can go into questions of taste, because every taxpayer has different tastes. And if we're going to have art at all, and then we come to the question of should it be subsidized through the NEA, then I think you've got to accept the fact that somebody might be offended.
What's your guess about why now there's been such an attack on controversial art? I mean, let's face it. There are so many artists who would just die to have their work seen. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
There's so much of the most controversial art basically went unnoticed outside of a few magazines and art magazines. And suddenly people who don't usually go to art galleries at all are protesting certain forms of art. Why is this happening now?
All of this is quite external. It's come up because of Mr. Helms. I think that had the Corcoran not called public attention, or one might say senatorial attention, to this exhibition, nothing would have happened. It would have gone on. I don't think most of the people in Congress go in to art museums. I don't think they've got a deep interest. But suddenly, attention was called to it, and a lot of noise got made. I think it's an electoral issue. I don't think it's an aesthetic issue. I don't even think it's a moral issue. I think it's a lot of hoopla.
You mean it's people politically exploiting the issue?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Mm-hmm. When you leave a show and you find yourself just agitated by something, is that good, you know, that you've been provoked? Is that
Oh, I hope so, yeah. Right. I mean, I don't think you just go to shows for the pleasure that you have while you're in them. I mean, like looking at floral bouquets or something. And I think that the art of the present moment is very provocative that way. But it's also should always have been provocative when you think about it. A lot of the powerful images of the past have sort of receded into the decorative scheme. But people should be pretty stirred by scenes of martyrdom. People should be pretty stirred by crucifixions. Should be pretty stirred by annunciations when you think about what it means if you happen to be a believing Christian. So I think art has mostly always been something that should leave you a bit reflective about something beyond the images themselves.
Well, Arthur Danto, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tara.
Arthur Danto's new collection of essays, Encounters and Reflections, is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux.